Hello and welcome to the MDS podcast, the official podcast of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. I am Michele Matarazzo, the editor-in-chief, and today we have a very special episode. Every year, the editors of the Movement Disorders Journal select one research article and one review article as the best of the year. This year, the award for the best research article goes to Microglial Activation and Progression of Nigrostriatal Dysfunction in Isolated REM Sleep Behavior Disorder. The study investigates the role of microglial activation, which is closely linked to the brain's immune response, in people with isolated REM sleep behavior disorder, which is a key prodromal stage of synucleinopathies. I'm delighted to be joined today by the corresponding author, Dr. Victor Wingelbue, from the Department of Nuclear Medicine and PET at the Aarhus University Hospital in Denmark. Victor, congratulations on this recognition. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
So before we get into the study itself, let me start with the award. The list of authors on this paper is really impressive. This was a huge collaborative effort. How did you and your co-authors receive the news, and what does this recognition mean for you and for your work?
Of course, it's really a recognition of the entire team's efforts. So it's a huge honor, especially, when you work with movement disorders, you want to be recognized by the Movement Disorder Society. That's second only to being recognized by the patients themselves, I would say. So,
perfect. And now let's dive a little bit into the background of the study. For listeners who might not be so familiar, could you explain what isolated REM sleep behavior disorder, or RBD, is and why it's such an important condition in the field of movement disorders?
Yeah. So just to explain briefly, isolated REM sleep behavior disorder is, in general, when you go to sleep, there's a disconnection or there's a disassociation of your lower body from your motor system. So you don't move while you sleep. You don't enact your dreams. In isolated REM sleep behavior disorders, for reasons that aren't entirely clear yet, this shutting down of the body for some reason doesn't work properly. So we have patients who act out their dreams. If you dream that you're being chased by a dragon, let's say, you'll be running around in your living room or your bedroom trying to escape. So that's the long and short of the disorder. The reason why it's so important is for Parkinson's disease and other Parkinsonisms, it's been well known for a while that the disease pathophysiological process starts years and even decades before there is a recognition or a diagnosis made. And in many cases, this prodromal stage, you might be able to discern it retroactively. And so for Parkinson's, it's well known that decades before manifest Parkinson's, a lot of patients will lose their sense of smell, and they might not have been aware that this is an early sign. So that the important thing about isolated REM sleep behavior disorder is that it is actually a recognizable prodromal syndrome to Parkinson's. So it actually gives us a window into the early or prodromal stages of the disease.
Yeah, perfect. So basically, looking into people with isolated REM sleep behavior disorder, we're looking into people that are highly likely to get Parkinson's disease or related disorders in the upcoming years.
Yes.
Okay, so definitely it sounds like a very important condition and situation to look at when you want to understand better the pathophysiology of Parkinson's disease and also some other Parkinsonisms, as you were mentioning. But why did you decide to focus on microglial activation?
Yes. So the reason why microglia are interesting in this regard is that it's a very hot topic right now, the issue of neuroinflammation in a breadth of disorders, not just in Parkinsonisms, but in much of neurology, actually. And it's an intriguing idea that inflammation of the brain might somehow be related to the pathophysiology or neurodegeneration that we see in Parkinson's. And for that reason, that's why microglia are interesting, because they are sort of the, I'm probably going to anger a few pathologists by saying this, but they are the monocytes of the central nervous system. Different cell.
Okay, well, if you're receiving an award, you're allowed to get some people angry.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about the study and let's talk about the design of the study. You used two different PET scans, the PK11195 to measure microglial activation and the F-DOPA to measure dopaminergic function. How did the study work? How did you design it?
So we had, at the initial stages, we had a cohort of IRBD patients who were scanned with PK11195 and with F-DOPA. And then we also had a control group who were scanned with PK11195 to give a baseline, because what we're interested in here is essentially the inflammation, particularly of the substantia nigra, right? So we had the control group to have sort of a baseline to compare to in the IRBD cohort. Then after 3 years had passed, we rescanned the IRBD patients with F-DOPA, the dopaminergic tracer, to see the degree to which the nigral neuroinflammation or microglial activation predicts or correlates with dopaminergic degeneration over time in these patients. Yeah.
And now let's tell me what were the main findings of the study.
Yes, I mean, there are several, but I think the most striking or the most important is when looking at the patients who had the highest PK-triple-195 binding in the substantia nigra at baseline, they had more substantial dopaminergic degeneration over time. And also, it appeared to be more widespread. I mean, the areas of the nigrous striatal system that were affected were larger in these patients compared to those patients with a lower degree of microglial activation at baseline. Yeah. So I think that's the big finding, I would say. Yes.
So we could say that microglial activation could predict the degree of neurodegeneration from the dopaminergic point of view.
That seems to be the case, yes. A larger degree or a higher degree of neuroinflammation in the nigra predicts, that would be the sort of the weak inference would be that it predicts higher dopaminergic degeneration over time. I mean, you could phrase it a little bit stronger, or you could speculate a little bit stronger and say that there seems to be some correlation between these two. And so that obviously raises the question to the extent to which they are causally related.
And before we speculate into this, when I was reading a paper, it was interesting to me that there were actually 4 patients who converted to manifest Parkinsonism during the follow-up.
Yeah.
Did their scans provide any extra clues or information?
Yeah, so in that sense, I think it's interesting to note that of the 4 IRBD patients who converted, 3 of them had PK-triple-195 binding in the substantia nigra that was at least a standard deviation and a half above that of the controls. And the 4th person who converted, while they were lower in nigral PK-triple-195 binding in the nigra at baseline, they also had one of the lowest or most widespread dopaminergic degenerations at baseline, indicating that they were probably closer to converting anyway, which it raises a question of if we accept or if we entertain the hypothesis that neuroinflammation is causally related, then it raises some interesting questions about the timeline or the dynamics of inflammation in relation to dopaminergic degeneration in these patients.
Perfect. Now related to that, let's speculate a little bit. What do you think these findings tell us about the role of neuroinflammation in the early stages of Parkinson's disease?
Yeah, so I think it raises some important questions. When we looked at baseline, it was very clear that patients with IRBD had higher PK-triple-195 binding compared to healthy controls. And what also seems to be the case of the findings of this paper, it seems to indicate that higher binding at baseline indicates a larger relative degree of dopaminergic degeneration over time. So at the least, it indicates that these are correlated. It might be that it's an epiphenomenon, that these are processes that run in parallel. We can't say that based on this paper. But at the very least, they seem to be correlated by, you know, it might be by some third, hence unknown process, or it might be causally related.
Perfect. I like that you're cautious about it, that the correlation is not causation. That's classic problem in research. But definitely, these findings point at least towards 2 processes that might be related to each other. And that's something very interesting. Now, in this study, you used a TSPO. PET tracer,
yes,
which is one of the main targets for neuroinflammation.
Yes.
PET.
Yes.
You think that using a different target, like, for example, the imidazoline 2 binding site, monoamine oxidase B or phosphodiesterase 4B, I mean, other neuroinflammation PET tracer, do you think that using other tracer might have told us a different part of the story?
I mean, certainly it could have told us a different part of the story, but I think what's the general characteristic of any neuroinflammatory tracer is they're comparable in to the extent that they're not able to reliably distinguish between neuroinflammation as a neuroprotective process or as a neurodegenerative process. So I think in that regard, they're comparable. And the same goes for a TSPO tracer, I would say. And I think that's actually part of the reason why I think this study is so interesting, because we know that in some diseases, at specific times, even during Parkinsonisms, microglia seem to exert a neuroprotective effect. And then at some point, for reasons we're not quite sure of yet, this changes. So it turns, right? And I think that might be actually part of what we're seeing here. So I think in that regard, choosing a different tracer might have told us a different part of the story. But I think the crucial part of the story is still the temporal dynamics of neuroinflammation and the dopaminergic degeneration. And I think in that sense, yes, most tracers are equal in that regard. It would be nice if we sometime in the future had more targeted neuroinflammatory traces, or that we're able to more reliably distinguish between these types of inflammation, protective and degenerative, but we're not quite there yet, unfortunately.
Great. Now we're getting close to the end of this interview. What are the next steps for your group? What do you plan to keep studying the role of neuroinflammation in this stage of the disease, or in general in Parkinson's disease, or in RAPSID behavior disorder?
I can tell you, obviously, that my successor in my group, he's been working with the same cohort, and he's also examining some of these temporal dynamics of neuroinflammation and the dopaminergic degeneration. So there is more to come in this regard. And I think personally, for my own sake, there's still a lot of work to be done regarding neuroinflammation, not just in Parkinsonisms, but also in related disorders. So absolutely.
Perfect. Victor, congratulations again to you and to the rest of the team.
Thank you.
For this outstanding recognition. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. Today, we've been celebrating the article, Microglial Activation and Progression of Neurostriatal Dysfunction in Isolated REM Sleep Behavior Disorder, awarded Best Research Article of the Year by the Movement Disorders Journal. The article was published in the August 2024 issue and is available open access. Goodbye, and see you in the next episode of the MDS podcast.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.